It may feel like spring is playing an April Fool's joke on us today, but it is spring, and grass everywhere is turning green. If your lawn isn't following suit, it may be time to take action. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. This hour, spring lawn care. ISU horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians will be here. We'll talk about what you should be doing to care for your lawn as that first flush of green spreads across the landscape. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Nick will answer your questions about your lawn, garden, and landscape. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, the first day of April, and we all know that April showers bring the mowing season. It's time to get outside and get to work. In a few minutes, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your questions. But first, we're going to talk about spring lawn care with Iowa State University horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Jerry.
Thank you so much for being here today. So, all right, it's been a fairly typical spring so far. Things are greening up. What kinds of opportunities do we have right now as far as turning our lawns into something beautiful?
Well, general cleanup and that sort of thing. Some people rake their lawns at this time if you got a lot of debris in it. That's not necessary in most cases, but it does make it look a little bit better. The main thing you've got to be concerned about in the next 30 days or so is the pre-emergence herbicide for the crabgrass. So that season is coming up very quickly.
All right. And with pre-emergence herbicide, what do you need to know?
Timing is critical. It is pre-emergent, so it means that you've got to put it down before the weed emerges. And in this case, the primary weed you're after is crabgrass, which you don't really realize is there now. It's about the middle of the summer when you see it. The date I picked for central Iowa on that is about the 15th of April, and that's pretty steady every year. Both Richard and myself have been getting a lot of calls lately about people worried because it's been a little warm that the crabgrass is going to germinate earlier. That's usually not the case. It germinates about the same time every year. It depends on where you're at in the state, though. Central Iowa, it'll germinate about the 1st of May. The southern part of the state, it'll be a couple weeks earlier, and the northern part of the state, probably the 15th of May before it germinates.
All right. Well, and it was warm, but now it's not.
So. It's cold this morning. We just walked over. It's real cold.
Maybe that'll slow things down a little bit.
It will. And it's pretty – I do studies where I apply different types of pre-emergence to see how they work. So every year for the past 37 years – I've been watching the crabgrass germinate. So I'm out there watching for the first crabgrass to peak up, and it's always about the same time. Warm springs, cool springs, it's very consistent. It's about that 1st of May here in central Iowa.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of people are going to get out there and rake their lawns, and then you said it wasn't necessarily something you needed to do. And I'm curious about that because there have been more and more people talking about, hey, maybe we should just be leaving the leaves on our lawns in the fall. What's your feeling about that? I mean, because a lot of us were sort of brought up with the idea you need to just strip it bare and let that grass show.
It depends on the situation. If you've got heavy shade and heavy leaves, you can get some damage from it. On the other hand, in most situations, those leaves will break down and they don't hurt a thing. They've done some studies on this, both at Michigan State and Purdue, where they set up areas, replicated studies, and put different amounts of leaves on it, all the way up to like 12 inches of leaves, and with the anticipation that the heavier weeds would probably have a detrimental effect on the turf. And what they find again and again, unless it's a heavy shaded area, is that they don't hurt. They break down. The lawn looks just fine later on in the season.
That is such good news. Are they beneficial in any way?
They are beneficial. It adds organic matter. It adds nutrients. So It can pay to take a mulching mower and chop them up in the fall so they break down quicker. But is it mandatory to rake them off? In most cases, no.
All right. Now, we've been talking about pre-emergence herbicides for crabgrass. What kinds of options do we have as far as different kinds of herbicides?
There are many different types, and they have a different price tag. Usually here in Iowa, we're far enough north, we have a short enough crabgrass period that you can get by with some of the lesser expensive materials. There's a whole group called dinitroanilins, which include things like pendimethalin and barricade and products like these. You'll see those names if you go to a garden store now and get a fertilizer pre-emerge application. They usually work pretty good. If you were further south and you had a long germination period, you would have to go to some of the more expensive products. But there are many choices.
All right. How about in organic choices?
The organic choice is corn gluten meal that I work with for a long time. It's the protein fraction of the corn. It's about 10% nitrogen, so you get both a nitrogen boost and it inhibits the root formation of the crabgrass. The timing for that is about the same as for the normal chemicals. That should go on in central Iowa about the middle of April.
All right. And how effective is it when you look at it side by side with some of those chemicals?
The first year, now we did extensive studies on this a number of years ago. The first year, if we're comparing it to chemicals, it's about 60% as effective. So you would reduce your weed crop considerably, but not to the same extent as a chemical. However, where we did this consistently over several years, by about the third year, we would find that it was now competitive with the chemical. You'd have over 90% control.
All right, so if you give it time.
If you give it time and you're consistent with the application of it, it will eventually get to what a chemical would do.
Now, I know you've been working with corn gluten meal for some time. How widely available has it become? Is it something that I can go down to my local garden store and pick up?
I just got a call on that a few minutes ago, and I need to go look this spring. In past years, I've seen it in Lowe's. I've seen it in Earl May. I've seen it in places like that, probably Walmart, Kmart. And Richard, if you got anything to add to that, have you seen it this spring?
I have not, no.
Okay. It can be, you'd have to ask, might have to ask by brand name, and there's a lot of different brand names of it. You can certainly get it mail order. There's a company called Gardens Alive, which is on the web, and they are a big mail order company for natural products out of Lawrenceburg, Indiana. They can send it any place, so they can get it by mail order. They got to start early to do that, but they can get it anywhere in the country.
Now, you talked about how it would become equally effective over a period of 3 years. Let's say you've been using a chemical pre-emergent for a few years, and then you decided to switch to cornmeal gluten or corn gluten meal. What would the difference be there?
There, it should be much more effective. The situation I was talking about was where we had extremely heavy crabgrass infestations, like 90% cover of crabgrass. So we started with extremely weedy areas and got about a 60% reduction the first year, into 80% by the second year, and over 90% by the third year. Whereas in an area like that, a chemical pre-emerge will probably give you over 90% the first year.
All right. Now, I'm sure that when you buy it, there are directions. But how does it differ as far as application from some of the herbicides people would be more familiar with?
Really, it doesn't differ in any way. You would put it on with a spreader. You would put it on about the same time, although you can probably wait a little longer and be successful with a chemical pre-emerge like pendimethalin or barricade. But I would try to get it down by the middle of April. You would be putting down your nitrogen with it, just like you would with a pre-emerge nitrogen fertilizer combination. So from a use standpoint, not a lot of difference.
All right. Now, I'm just going to anticipate some of the calls we're going to get, Nick, because spring comes and people look at their lawn and they think, oh, I need to overseed my lawn or I need to plant grass. How about seeding in the spring? I know it's not the ideal time, but is it something that you can do right now?
Can you do it? Yes. If you do it and you put down a pre-emerge of any kind, including the corn gluten meal, you're not going to get any germination from the grasses that you seeded. Those chemicals will kill bluegrass, ryegrass, fescue, anything that you would be seeding in this region. The pre-emerges would also kill. So that means that if you spring seed, you can't put down a pre-emerge, and that is a big problem because what comes up is crabgrass and foxtail and these competitive species. That's why a late summer to early fall seeding is so much more effective. You don't have those weeds competing at that time of year.
All right. So your recommendation is that now is a good time to plan ahead, but not necessarily pull the trigger on seeding.
Right. And that's what I tell people. I set August 15 in central Iowa as our seeding date. That's where I tell people to start. It's too hot in the summertime, but by August 15, it's a pretty good time. That is really the time to seed. Now, often when people look at their lawn at this time of the year and they think it's a little thin, seeding probably doesn't do that much good anyway. I would put down the pre-emerge and some fertilizer, and if they have a Kentucky bluegrass lawn, they'll be amazed at how that will fill in. The Kentucky bluegrass has a rhizome system underground, and with a little fertilizer, it'll spread and fill in very effectively without adding additional seed.
Now, often on this program, we hear from people who are a little tired of lawn care and tired of mowing and tired of the inputs that some people feel are required for those lush green lawns. And they're always looking for alternative lawn covering. Is there anything that people are excited about right now that you think is worth taking a look at?
Not really. And we do studies on this all the time. We have a regional study on alternative grasses. We're always looking for something better than the species we have. If we had something better than Kentucky bluegrass, we'd be recommending it and people would be using it. The problem is there isn't anything better than that, and that's still your best bet in most lawn situations. Now, it doesn't work well in the shade. There you need some shade-adapted grasses like the fine fescues, but in full sun, you've got a hard time beating Kentucky bluegrass in all of Iowa.
All right. And, of course, people are going for kind of alternative looks now as well with the native grasses. It's still not the perfect time to seed a lawn with native grasses either, is it?
Well, it depends on what you mean by native. If they are a warm season species, if they have a C4 photosynthetic system, as do the southern species like Bermuda, Zoysia, buffalo grass, those should be seeded about the 1st of June because they thrive in the high temperature periods of midsummer. So let's say buffalo grass, which does all right in this area, this would be too early. You'd have to do it in June.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. If you have lawn questions, Nick Christians is here to answer them. Iowa State University horticulture professor and turf grass expert, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also join us, and we would love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians, and also with us now, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we've already got the phone lines lighting up at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll start with Laura in Ames. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about, I would like a privacy fence made of shrubbery. So I have a chain link fence. It's about five feet tall. It runs north and south. And I was looking for a good idea of what I could use, something that years from now I'm not going to be sorry I planted it, like a honeysuckle bush or something that I've heard bad things about.
Well, you have choices. It could be evergreen,
Yeah. Okay,
which would be effective year-round, okay?
Okay.
And if you went with an evergreen, it would be some type of arborvitae.
Okay.
They're upright. They're very common in nurseries, garden centers, but they're evergreen. They're upright. Things like emerald is one. Holmstrup is another variety, but they're very, very common. Just make sure they get to the desired size, because they vary quite a bit in size as far as height and spread. As far as deciduous shrubs, I would look at things like, for example, dogwood, like the red-twigged dogwood, very common. Mm-hmm. I would look at lilacs.
Oh, yeah.
Like the common lilac, for example. There's also some dwarf cultivars or varieties. I would look at some of the viburnums, like arrowwood viburnum or American cranberry bush viburnum.
What about something that's very narrow, like a Virginia creeper?
Well, see, Virginia creeper is a vine, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that has to climb on something. You could try that on a fence, but to me, I don't think that would be a good match. Your deciduous shrubs are basically about the same as far as width as their height. So if you plant a shrub that grows 8 to 10 feet tall, it's going to be 8 to 10 feet wide. Now, with your arborvitae, they tend to be very columnar, okay? So you may have a variety that grows 8 foot tall that grows 3 feet wide. So that might be your best choice.
Okay. And perhaps, I don't know if I said it, but there is a chain link fence there currently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was, I wanted something that could kind of climb up it.
So are you looking for
I'd be looking for a...
Right, you said shrubbery, but are you thinking possibly like a vine? Is that what you
were... Maybe I am thinking a climbing vine, something that just sticks to that chain link fence and doesn't invade and encroach onto our lawn on the other side, so we still have space.
Well, as far as vines, I think those are limited. One possibility might be the sweet autumn clematis, which is a very tough, very reliable clematis. It blooms in late summer. It has small white flowers. It's a very vigorous plant. It will climb the fence and then kind of crawl along the top. So that would be an option.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Laura. And you can call 866-780-9100 with your questions. Al is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Al.
Hey. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I was listening about the planting grass seed in the spring, and I just planted it 2 days ago. But it is in a shaded area. Heavily shaded area, and it was mostly made up of fescue. And so ordinarily my lawn care company puts down pre-emergent in their first round, so they didn't do that this time, and they said they would do it the next time they're coming in. So I'm wondering if that will get me through the spring. Secondly, I have a problem with fungus in this yard. And usually about July or late June, sometimes I think it's called frog eyes or summer patch, where little dead patches with a little green right in the middle is left, hits my yard. And I wonder if I should be more aggressive treating that first rather than waiting till it happens to treat it.
Okay, let's start with your spring seeding. Now, luckily, in the shade, crabgrass doesn't do well in the shade. So you can get by with spring seeding the fescues in the shade. I still would prefer a mid-August to early September, probably before you get too many leaves on it, even in the shade like this. So if this is not successful this spring, put it on your calendar for doing it in the late summer again. But this this might work out. Now, you said they didn't put any on in the first app, but they're going to come back yet this spring and put another app on, or are they going to come back next year and put an app on?
They said the next round.
The next round. So if it's up, that'll be all right, as long as they've germinated. But certainly any pre-emerge they put on there before those seeds germinate, it's going to kill that seed. So timing is critical there.
Do I need that pre-emergent? I've used this pre-emergent for like 10 years. Do you think I can go summer without
I would, it? Well, in the sun, I would tell them what you've done, and it sounds like they knew that. Tell them to stay out of the shade with the pre-emerge app. But they could then do it in the full sun as long as you haven't seeded there, and that would be successful. But you don't want them spreading it into the shaded area.
What about the fungus?
Okay, the fungus is there's a number of patch diseases like that. And the collective term is frog eye pattern, and that's what you were describing.
Yeah.
Very common as you get into stress periods of midsummer. Cultural things first. You could core aerify. Water and try not to let the area get into stress because it's stress that kind of kicks it off. So that'll help. If that doesn't solve the problem, there are systemic fungicides. There are both contacts and systemics, and only the systemics will work for those diseases. So you'd want to make sure that the fungicide is labeled for that type of disease. And then you have to put it on early before the symptoms develop, and that's tricky. You get it 1 year, and then the next year you know that it's going to come back to the same place, and you put it down probably in mid-June would be pretty good timing for it. You water it in, and those systemic fungicides will do a pretty good job on the patch diseases, but it's all timing. If you wait for the symptoms to develop, you put the chemical on, you're wasting your money. It's not going to help.
All right, Al, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Chris in Illinois. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Thanks for providing the service. I have an area, probably a half an acre, that's going to be completely graded and reshaped and needs to be replanted in some type of a grass, preferably a lower maintenance type grass. Most of it's full sun, some of it's a little bit of it's in the shade. And I'm looking to find what would be the best mix to use in and when to plant it.
And where in Illinois are you?
In the Quad City area.
Okay, so you're north. In that situation, some of the mid-range Kentucky bluegrasses, and what I mean by that is the moderately priced ones, there's quite a bit of difference in pricing on the Kentucky bluegrass cultivars. Some are quite expensive. The ones that are made for like a golf course fairway or a really high maintenance lawn are they're premium seed and they require a lot of fertilization. They require a lot of water, but they are very high quality when you're managing them right. Now you're talking about a larger area where you want it nice, but you don't want to spend a lot of money on fertilizer and water and that sort of thing. I assume you're not going to water it at all. Is that right?
It would be difficult.
Okay. So I would still go with a blend of three or four Kentucky bluegrass cultivars. Go to a good dealer, and I'm not sure who that'd be in your area, but go to a good reputable garden store or something like this where you have people that are knowledgeable about the seed and tell them what you're doing. It's going to be a mid-range, mid-level maintenance area. And they will likely have a blend of these Kentucky bluegrass cultivars that will be well suited to that area.
Okay. Would it be advantageous to add some clover?
It depends on what kind of quality you want. The clover, of course, is a legume. It contributes some nitrogen to the area, which does help, but you're going to get kind of a mixed broadleaf and bluegrass lawn. That's been back in the 40s and 50s. That was very common. People often put clover with it. Today, the clover is not bad, but the other broadleaf weeds like dandelion and plantain and things like this, the chemicals it takes to kill those will also kill the clover. So unless you're willing to take a lot of yellow dandelions in the spring and other broadleaf weeds along with your clover, I'd probably stick with just bluegrass, and then once a year in the fall, hit it with a herbicide for broadleaves, for dandelion and that sort of thing.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for your call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You are welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. And Curtis is up next in Spirit Lake. Hi, Curtis.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
I have raked my backyard. It's pretty. It's got quite a few trees back there. It seems like I have more moss than I have grass. Is there a way to get rid of that moss and then put grass back down, or what do I do there?
I think last week we had somebody calling asking how they could grow moss in their yard. If only you could trade places. All right.
moss is there because of the type of microclimate that's developed in that area. It's wet, it's shaded, and something is going to grow in that area, usually not grass, or even the ground covers have a hard time, and that's where moss is going to come in. So there's really nothing chemical that I would recommend to solve your problem. You could cut off some of the lower story branches, try to get a little more sun in there, put okay. in a fine fescue or something this fall to compete with it. But no, there's no magic bullet chemical that's going to take that out and keep it out.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And even in an area where grass doesn't grow, Nick, do you think moss is an okay alternative? It's better than bare ground and mud,
you know,
right?
I kind of like moss in some areas. I've got a flagstone area in my backyard around a fountain, and I encourage the moss between the flagstones, and it looks really nice in there. So there's places where moss can be attractive, but it can be annoying when you don't want it, particularly right. under trees.
All right. John is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a question. We have a lot of areas of our yard that is not grass. My wife has grown hostas and daylilies and a lot of plants. You were talking earlier about whether or not you should rake leaves off of grass. What about garden areas where you have, you know, hosta-type plants growing?
Right.
You need to rake those every year?
Well, oftentimes we do just for appearance sake, for aesthetic reasons.
Uh-huh.
If it's a small amount of leaves, no, you don't have to. If you had a lot of debris, you might want to take some of that off because if we have, for example, a lot of debris and it actually covers the crown of the plant, and then we have a very wet spring and summer, it may keep the plants a little bit too wet. And that could lead to maybe some crown rots. So typically when you mulch a perennial bed, we suggest putting the mulch between the plants, around the plants, but don't actually cover the actual crowns where the plants come up.
Okay.
So a little bit of debris is okay, not large amounts though.
So a little bit of like an inch of leaves or something?
Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad, but several inches probably would be too much.
And now if you're mulching before the plants, or should you not mulch before the plants come out of the ground?
What I like to do on the perennial flower beds is go out typically in early May and apply my mulch. Because by then...
Oh, after you see... After
right.
You see them
they're up. They're up. I can see exactly where they are, but they aren't too big yet, so I can work around them fairly easily.
Right.
That's the ideal time to do it.
Right. So you're not covering them.
Right.
Unknowingly. Okay. Great. Well, I think you answered my question. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's hit a few email questions here. Again, you can email your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This one's from John. He says, will pre-emergent herbicide prevent corn germination?
Wow. That's a good question.
It is a grass.
It is a grass. It would depend on the
type. But it's a big
type.
Seed, though.
Hmm?
It's a big seed, though.
Yeah. I can't think of any situation where you'd want to do that. There are specialty chemicals for weed control in cornfields, and I'm going to probably direct them to Bob Hartzler in agronomy on that one.
All right.
Because it wouldn't be the same products we're talking about here.
Well, and it depends on how you read the question, too, because are we worried about preventing corn germination, or do we want to prevent corn germination?
That's what I was thinking. You know, is he growing corn in his garden or something, or is he trying to keep it up? Normally, it would not be invasive. You wouldn't see it coming up in a lawn, and if you'd mow it once, it'd be gone.
Right. So, but if you put the pre-emergent on your lawn and not on your garden, you're not likely to have drift there, would you?
Not unless you get too close to it and you spread it over into the garden.
Okay.
And you should avoid that.
All right. Here's another question on pre-emergent from Lori in Des Moines. I'm planning on putting my pre-emergent down this weekend. When do I put on the next application and what should that be?
Well, in Des Moines, in Des Moines, she should be all right with a single application. Go at the recommended label rate. If you're further south, if this were Kansas City, then they might have to do an extra application about 30 days later. But I would probably recommend that she wait another week to 10 days, put on the application then, and just go with a single application. She should not need another one.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me this hour, ISU horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. You are welcome to ask your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and ISU hort professor and turfgrass expert Nick Christians. You're welcome to join with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And now we've reached the point in the program today where we're going to ask you to be clairvoyant, Richard.
Okay.
So, all right. Are you ready? This is a question. My sister wants to come visit us here in central Iowa when the lilacs, redbuds, crabapples, et cetera, are in bloom. Any guesses when might be the best time this year?
I'm going to say now they bloom at different times. They don't bloom all at the same time. The redbuds will bloom before the lilacs typically do. I'm guessing the redbuds might be in bloom probably in 14 days, possibly.
All right.
And so probably around the 15th, 20th of April. And then I'm going to guess with the crab apples, probably the last week or so in April. So I'm going to say April 20th to the 30th. And the lilacs may be early May.
All right. And
those are guesses.
I think a great way, having gone to Iowa State University, and of course that's also in central Iowa, I think you should look at the finals schedule, because I always felt like when I was stuck inside studying for finals, it was when everything was at peak bloom and beauty.
And finals this year is the first week of May.
All right. So right in there. Maybe dead week, that last week in April.
Yep.
Also a time to be inside and feel the pain. So just an old tip. You can join our conversation with your questions, and Richard can tell the future for you at 866-780-9100. Brian is on the line next from Elwood. Hi, Brian.
Hey.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, we moved into a new home last year. Currently, we have a pear tree. I don't know much about fruit trees, but it looks like to me it's really never had anything done to it. And it did have fruit last year, but it looked like it was so much, you know, there weren't very large pears on it and that. I just was wondering about, you know, prunage or care or something like that, so maybe we can get a little better quality crop off of it.
Okay. Well, you can do some pruning yet, but it has to be done pronto. And okay. I guess I would remove obvious defects in the tree. By that I mean dead branches, take those out. Any broken branches, take those out. Branches that grow maybe inward rather than outward. Branches that grow too low, hang too low. So basically defects, and leave it at that. And then this year, if it has a lot of fruit on it, if it blooms and it has a lot of fruit, go out within 30 days of bloom and take off quite a few of those fruit by hand. And so when you're done thinning, there should be just one fruit every 6 inches on a branch. So you may have to remove like half or two-thirds of the fruit to get really good quality fruit.
All right. Brian, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Jenny with an unusual question in northeastern Iowa. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
My question for you is I have about 2 acres in the backyard and would like to install a hedge maze. What kind of shrubs or plants should I purchase for that?
A hedge maze.
Yeah.
This could be expensive.
All right.
That's
maybe the longest pause I've ever heard you take, Richard. This is good.
Now, if you wanted an evergreen, it could be possibly arborvitae or yews. Those are evergreens, and they could be used, but you would need a large number of plants to do that. But that would be an evergreen that you could prune into a hedge very, very nicely, very easily, if you wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other plants that you could possibly do would be maybe privets, where you can prune those into a formal hedge. You could almost prune any shrub into a hedge if you really wanted to. Some of the lilacs might be good as far as some of the dwarf lilacs, for example. They do quite well if they're pruned into a hedge.
And are you looking for that really manicured look with the hedge?
No. The less work, the better.
Okay. So you could put in various shrubs if you wanted to. It could be dogwoods, viburnums, lilacs. You don't have to prune them, but eventually you will as far as maintenance, but you don't have to prune them into a formal hedge. They could just be natural as far as the shape. And all those are very sturdy plant. You might also consider the commonly called Brittleleaf spirea, very common, grows 6 to 8 foot tall, tough as nails. You might go with nine bark, another pretty tough plant. So quite a few different shrubs would be suitable.
Now,
how long do they take to grow?
I was gonna ask the same question, Jenny, because how long do you want it to be before people can get lost in there?
Well,
soon.
So there are a lot of variables involved on that. One, how good is your site as far as soil conditions, things like that. How big a plant you put in there to begin with, that is a factor, obviously. Most of those shrubs are not going to grow rapidly. They might grow maybe 6 inches, a foot a year, possibly, especially the deciduous types. But they're typically not going to grow 2 or 3 feet a year, usually.
Okay. Sounds good. Within 5 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right, right, Richard?
Right, yeah.
All right, well, good luck. It sounds like a long-term project. You should call us back in a couple years and let us know how it's going, Jenny.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Next up, we've got John in Des Moines. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm here. Hi. We have about a half an acre in our backyard, and it kind of rolls down into a valley. And then we had some landscaping, and everything was fine until the floods in 2008 and 2010. We had a lot of standing water that came up and killed off a lot of the plants that we had and grasses and things of that nature. It's very shaded, so we had some ground cover plants and things of that nature. But and brought with it an alien variety of seeds of types that I've never seen, so the last couple of years I've done my best, but I didn't do anything real early in the year. I tried to combat things as they came up, and I was wondering, it's gotten to the point where it's really very difficult to keep up with it unless I'm spending, 16, 20 hours a week, and I don't think I want to do that. So I was wondering if there's something I could do early in the year that would help me keep up with it for the rest of the year so we could enjoy the backyard rather than just kind of having to try to fence it off and enjoy just the top part.
So your main concern is you want to kill something or you want to establish something?
Well, some of both. I mean, if there's something that I could put down that would be shade resistant but could grow and try to choke out some of the weeds and things that have grown
right
up, as well as, if I don't know, there's been a lot of talk about pre-emergent in the earlier show, but if there was something I could do now or in the next few weeks to try to keep down the number of things that do come up in addition to planting something that might help.
Most of the things probably coming up are coming up from roots or crowns, so they're not coming up from seed. So a pre-emergent wouldn't have any effect on those plants. So you're probably going to have to destroy them by some means. You can obviously dig them up. That's one option. You can spot treat with Roundup. That's another option. But I think you're going to have to destroy those plants because they tend to be more vigorous than your desirable plants. That's just their nature. And so you're going to have to, I think, at some point, destroy them by some means. I would look at maybe some of the native plants to grow in these areas that kind of spread on their own. Things like woodland phlox, Virginia bluebell, Solomon's seal, bloodroot, Jack in the Pulpit. I would try to establish those and let them kind of reseed themselves and spread. A wild columbine would be another one. They tend to reseed themselves very freely. But they're going to need some help because they're not going to be able to crowd out those vigorous weeds. And so you have to get rid of those.
Okay. That makes sense. All right, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, John. And again, we'll go back to some email questions here. We've got a couple of people asking basically the same thing, Nick. They're saying they've already put their pre-emergent on. They're concerned that maybe they jumped the gun. Is it too early? Are they going to need to reapply?
Well, that depends on when they did it. This weekend would not be too early. It'd be on the early side. But I've had people contacting me since early March. And they saw the lawn care companies out at that time putting on the pre-emerge, and they wanted to know if they should do it then. That would be too early. You would have to come back in with a second application. But if you time it properly now, I'd say from the 10th to the 20th of April, you should be able to get by with a single application. Now, the answer to your question, were they too early or not too early, depends on when they did it. If they did it over the weekend, they're probably all right. If they did it 3 weeks ago, they may need another application.
All right. Here's a question from Jordan. I recently got 200 laying hens. I was thinking about letting them graze on my lawn. Their coop is on wheels and their pen is in an area about 150 feet by 150 feet. He says, I know their manure is very rich, but would it be good for the yard? My yard is never treated with chemicals. We have a lot of clover that grows. I wouldn't let them graze it to bare soil and would keep them moving around the 5-acre yard. What do you think?
I was going to say you've got to move them because I grew up on a farm and we did that with both rabbits and chickens, and they could just graze the grass right down to nothing very easily. So they would have to move it. Yes, the manure will have a benefit. Chances are they will have square green areas the size of that cage within a few weeks. So if you could do it uniformly, it would be beneficial.
All right. And you got to stay on top of it because they can turn it into
a
desert really fast, right?
Yep.
All right. Here's a question. I have limestone slabs making a short pathway in my backyard, but over the years, the grass has died further and further away from the stones. Is the limestone the reason the grass is dying?
I would sincerely doubt that that's the case. And normally I have grass growing in it. The problem is you got too much grass and you got to keep trimming it back. I would assume some chemical has been used there, and it that would be the cause. I can't think of any non-herbicidal thing that would cause that, and it would not be the limestone. That would not have that big an impact on the soil. In some areas, it might even be beneficial.
All right. Here's a question from Michelle in Granger. I have a horrible crabgrass problem in my garden. What's the best way to deal with this problem, as a pre-emergent is counterproductive in a garden, and I would prefer an organic method?
Well, the organic method is hoeing and pulling, basically. you can't avoid that. But if you stay ahead of the situation where you go out there periodically and do this, you can keep ahead of it. And then I would probably go out around the 1st of June and put on a mulch, like shredded leaves, grass clippings, that type of thing, and you should be in good luck.
All right. And again, you got to stay on top of that one.
Yes, you do.
All right. I've learned that year after year as I fail year after year. All right. Kim is on the line in Rhinebeck. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
What's your question?
We have a buffalo grass we put in about 20 years ago in our ditch. And now the bluegrass is taking over and weeds. When and what should we spray on it or burn it?
Now, do you want to keep the buffalo grass or do you want to get rid of it?
We want to keep it.
You want to keep it, okay. Oh, my.
Could you use Roundup on that early? Would that be a possibility?
When it's truly dormant, you can use a non-selective like Roundup, but if it's greening up at all and it might be a little too late already, you would do some damage to the buffalo grass. There in the back of my mind, there is a chemical. You were in Rhinebeck, was that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is a chemical called Keturah that PBI Gordon carries that will keep grasses like bluegrass out of buffalo grass, but I'm not sure about its labeling in Iowa at this point. It's new, so that's a possibility, but last year it was not labeled for use in Iowa. They could use it in Kansas and Nebraska and areas like that. So I'm not sure. I would have to check on that. You could send me an email at the university, and I could check on that for you.
All righty. Thank you.
All right, Kim. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can look up Nick Christians on the Iowa State University website. One final question from Doug in Fairfield. Hi, Doug.
Hey, hi. I'm wondering about bull thistle. Down our way here in southeast Iowa, we've got an invasion going on of a new variety of thistle that's really pretty aggressive. To have a little talk about bull thistle and its life cycle and how to deal with it.
Well, I guess I'd refer you to our weed scientist here at Iowa State. That would be Bob Hartzler. The last name is Hartzler. And so if you go to the Iowa State University homepage, there is a directory button, and type in his name and you'll find his phone number.
Yeah, maybe for a future show, it might be good to have him come on.
It would be.
A problem down here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Thanks a lot for your call, Doug, and good luck with that. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Nick Christians, thank you.
Thank you.
Iowa State University horticulture professor and turf grass expert Nick Christians. Horticulture Friday will be back again next week on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can follow us on Twitter at IPR Talk. I'm there as well at Charity Nebbe. You can also follow us on Facebook, Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Have a great weekend.